something that's important to me is I think our world is better if companies behave in a way that is more human, the way that you and I would treat each other as friends.
You gotta pick yourself up, go backwards, and slam yourself at the wall like 500 more times until the wall crumbles.
25% of middle school girls already believe they'll never achieve their dream career.
Hi, I'm Kara Golden, founder and CEO of Hint.
Listening to Unstoppable, a podcast spotlighting the journeys of inspiring entrepreneurs. I believe that at its core, leadership is about constantly learning from the people around you, and I'm so inspired by the conversations we're having in our upcoming episodes and can't wait to share them with you. This season, some of my guests include Rebecca Minkoff, fashion designer and founder of the Female Founder Collective, Diana Kaff, author of Girls Who Run the World, Andrew Dudham, founder of Hims, and Eugene Rem, co-founder of Rumble Fitness, and much, much more. Plus, we ask the million-dollar question, what does it really take to be unstoppable? Let's find out. Hi, everybody. It's Kara Golden from Unstoppable, and we're here today with one of my favorite founders, Sarah Rodell from Loop and Tie.
Hi.
Welcome.
Excited to be here.
Yeah, super excited. And we're taping from the Wing in Soho in New York, which is an amazing, amazing spot. So we're very, very excited to be here. So just a little bit about Sarah. Sarah and I, first of all, are on this great list called The List. And Rachel and Glynis, if you're out there, hello, thank you for introducing Sarah and I. Appreciate it. So Sarah is the founder and CEO of Loop and Tie, which is a digital gift giving service. It's been written up in all kinds of publications, but it's also just this amazing, amazing service for lots of enterprise companies, including Salesforce, the 49ers, the Muse, another lister as well. And just overall, like, gives you digital collections of gifts that you can pick out based on lots of different budgets. So if you haven't gone to Loop and Tie, you should definitely go to loopandtie.com and check it out. But we're here today to talk a little bit more about Sarah and how she got going on this whole great idea back in, launched in 2012.
Yeah, well, the long version is.
Yeah, let's hear it.
You know, the idea was born then, first version of the site, 2013, but I look at 2015 was sort of the time Loop and Tie became what it really is today. It is, it's been a journey, but an exciting one.
That's awesome. And you, and so you're backed by, well, Steve Case is one of your original backers,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
So I first had the opportunity to meet Steve when I pitched it at Google Demo Day. So that was the first big pitch competition I'd ever done. And it was one of those rare binary moments where there was a clear difference before and after that day
for
the trajectory of the company. And Steve was a judge and decided to make a personal investment after
That's
demo
awesome.
Day. And then we joined what is now the Rise of the Rest portfolio that he has, which is this really fantastic fund based off of investing in companies that are headquartered outside of tech centers. So he is single-handedly doing a lot to grow ecosystems outside of Silicon Valley.
That's awesome. And so you didn't actually get the funding here in New York. You went to the pitch competition where?
Right. Well, the competition was actually out in Silicon Valley, but I started the company in Austin, Texas.
Oh, okay.
Which is where I'm from.
Yeah.
And I left New York.
Go Texas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't go to UT, I'm a UVA grad, but I always have Longhorns in my blood.
That's awesome.
And Austin's a fantastic place to start a company.
That's terrific. So you didn't start out in sort of retail or the gift giving. You were at UBS?
Yeah. So my first job out of college, I worked on the trading floor at UBS. And it was a pretty wild time. I was there in 2008. And the name of the game was doing anything creative you could to really assert your value. People, you know, the industry was changing. A lot of people were losing their jobs. And it was a really interesting foundation for me to come in, you know, 22 years old, not having a strong, I would say, industry knowledge or a lot of concrete skill sets, but really trying to creatively figure out ways to be relevant. And I think that creativity has kind of infused the way that I think about building and running companies.
That's awesome. So how did you, like, do you remember the moment when you had this idea? Like,
yeah, it was kind of funny. I volunteered to handle the gifts that we were doing for our clients for the holidays. And sort of the silly part of why is twofold. The first thing is, when you're first starting working on the trading floor, you do any favor possible so that people, you know, like you and give you opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's something everybody was complaining about. And I was like, how hard can this be? And I just gotten my first corporate card and I wanted to put charges on it so I could get points.
I love points too. Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was like, you know, checking both the boxes. And so I volunteered to do it and I couldn't believe how inefficient it was. And I'm a systems thinker and I was like, oh my gosh, we're spending so much money buying these, you know, we ended up buying gift baskets for these clients that I had no idea if they actually cared, right? It was more of a formality than it was something useful. And I was struck by how often when you're buying something for somebody, there are these constraints that you may or may not know about. So I didn't know people didn't drink, or, you know, some of our clients were kosher. Some of our clients' kids had peanut allergies.
Totally. Yeah.
And there were all these things that were risk factors and made it such that in some cases it would have been better if I didn't buy something. And so I just spent time thinking about the market and the myths that I saw where most entities, you know, in the space that are approaching the gifting budgets are leading with product catalogs. Nobody is leading with a process. And so my thought was, if I can change the process by which gifts are given, which is, by the way, a $90 billion industry,
yeah, it's huge.
I can fundamentally reduce waste that's happening. I can actually make sure that the intention serves, you know, the relationship building desire that people have when they're giving gifts to begin with. And eventually my goal was to support a whole new community of makers and small businesses that I just didn't see being represented in the corporate purchase.
That's awesome.
So yeah, that's why choice is such a big part of what we do, because through this idea of sending choice, it's a fundamentally different process. And then all of a sudden now the choices can be really niche items sourced from small businesses. We allow choice of charitable donation, which is incredible. It's a top five thing that's selected by a lot of gift recipients. And so now all of a sudden, instead of this fruit basket rotting away in a kitchen, you're actually, you know, charity water is a top cause that we support, and we're actually making a difference. So there's a lot of things that sort of spun out of this initial moment of me trying to just do a favor and get some points on my corporate card.
That's awesome. That's super, super cool. So, you know, let's go back to actually pitching and when you went, you know, to the Google competition. What do you think was the key thing that made you stand out?
You know, this idea of pitching process has been fundamentally something that has defined us from a product standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, you know, as I've gone back and had the opportunity of perspective and understanding, and it's been a long time, like, why am I still here?
Yeah. No,
there have been a lot of moments of failure along the way. And one of the biggest gifts that I had was launching a first product that did not work. Mm-hmm. It was more consumer facing. It's what I had initially raised on. It was not what I was pitching for at the Google event. But in the moment of declaring that this product wasn't working, I had to go back to our investors and say, hey, I have this idea. And Loop in Time was actually one of the initial ideas I had. I just didn't decide to launch with it at first. Going back to them and saying, hey, you know, this didn't work. And I have this idea for something that could. I could either return the money that
investment,
I have,
yeah,
or try the same thing. And the response that I got was, we invested in you and your ability to change tact. And so we believe, you know, it's not necessarily the product. It's just we're banking on your ability to create something that the world needs. I mean, hearing that just like fundamentally transformed the way that I thought and the way that I led, because I realized before that moment, I was really in a loss aversion state. I was afraid of letting people down.
Yeah.
But then hearing that, I was more in a growth mindset.
Yep.
And so I think that, you know, a differentiator for me that I now know is really having the good fortune of being backed by people that see the way I think.
Yeah.
And that really believe in my ability to change tact.
So was this before the Google competition?
When I had some, like, friends and family money and, you know, some angel and, you know, a bit larger.
And did you talk about that in the Google competition? Like,
you know, I think the Google competition was just very product focused.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I remember I still get this where people are like, huh, it's a $90 billion industry.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the biggest opportunity for me is that people, when I say the word corporate gifting, people think it's boring.
Yeah.
And it is. And that's what, you know.
People just want it handled.
Yeah. And, you know, it's this massive amount of spend that I think is actually only becoming increasingly important. And we're seeing budgets grow as companies need to differentiate through their relationship management as product is getting a bit more commoditized. And I think, you know, seeing that market opportunity and the amount of money that's being spent and the, you know, how wild it is that everyone is selling into it in the same way is the biggest opportunity. And the fact that people think it's boring, like there's so much opportunity
yeah.
that people think these are boring.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting that it's such a big industry and more like retailers aren't really in, you know, officially in that. I mean, I remember Tiffany used to have like a whole corporate gifting program, but then, you know, it just didn't, it's crazy.
A lot of people are in the market, but because of them choosing to sell product, they're very focused. They get anchored to occasion. So with Tiffany, they have a business selling crystal commemorative plaques.
Yeah.
You know, and like that is their corporate gifting business and they have, you know, crystal bowls and all these like anniversary gifts. But then all of a sudden your growth is hinged to your product relevance.
Mm-hmm.
And a crystal bowl is only relevant to certain demographics and certain occasions. And I think, you know, in many ways it's becoming less relevant.
Yeah.
The products that people are choosing are more of the DTC variety where you want to understand the story behind the maker. You want to have a connection to it. We're not just looking for more stuff. We're looking for stuff that we resonate with. And so we've got to fundamentally rethink what the process is that's accessed. And so, you know, Loop and Tie, you know, a technology company first, or we rethink what the platform is. And then we have these stores that sit on top and there's a world where we can work with Tiffany and make their catalog relevant.
Yeah.
And so I think about that over time, but there's, you know, the way that I approach growth and company building is really understanding the deeply ingrained behaviors that are driving each part of the purchase decision and the seller's decision. And gifting is interesting to me because there are deeply ingrained behaviors that are not actually serving the intention.
Yeah.
Which is pretty fascinating.
It's interesting. And you're able to like really see behaviors based on like, you know, generational, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that, do you see a huge, you know, difference between a Gen X versus a millennial and sort of what they're shopping for too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So one of the biggest industries that we sell into is apartments who use us for move-in and lease rental gifting.
Interesting.
And so we're able to see from a demographic standpoint, we sell it to some properties that are 55 plus, and then, you know, we sell into some that are more focused around college campuses or, you know, folks that are just graduating college. And the kind of, before I answer the product question, I always think it's funny. People get worried that the 55 plus community won't appreciate a tech forward gifting exchange, but all of them have iPhones.
Totally.
You know, it's just, it's like a funny piece of pushback we see at the beginning, and there's tons of engagement from that community. It's not a real piece of pushback. But what we're seeing on lower age end tier is this preference for food and more experiential, like entertaining based items.
Interesting. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Right. It, you know, it makes sense. Sort of the
community and social
and starting your home and that kind of thing. We look at the older demographics, it's much more things that you would use yourself. So bath products, home products, things like that.
What's the average price point for a gift?
So across the board, $40, which is also the average price point the research shows nationally. So it's interesting to see that gets, you know, it's exact in our data.
What's the best gift that you've ever gotten
on
Loop and Tie?
My current favorite gift is this kimono robe that we just started selling.
That sounds amazing.
I know. It's this maker in Austin called The Robery. And it's this perfect light flannel. And it's great in winter and in summer. I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what's next for Loop and Tie? What are you super excited about for 2020?
Well, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about is what is the future of brand building look like?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a reason that I care about growing this business is because the context that I sell into is a gratitude mindset. So if a company is buying gifts, they fundamentally care about showing appreciation, which is something that I feel really strongly about. I've over the past, I'd say it was 2019, but really in the end of 2019, we really started seeing companies who came to us because they wanted to have a gratitude moment in their customer journeys. And they were actually using that word gratitude, which if, you know, in 2015, if you talk to a company about what they were doing around gratitude practices, like that yeah, wasn't a conversation totally that was happening. And so I've seen a really big shift. And then, and also companies were wanting to make sure that their product exchanges were more sustainable. And there's a big piece of how we reduce waste through choice. So the future for me is really taking these nuggets of interest for companies and building content around that, because I think, you know, something that's important to me is I think our world is better if companies behave in a way that is more human, mm-hmm. The way that you and I would treat each other as friends, right? There shouldn't be a difference,
it's a relationship,
between how
right,
we treat our
right,
customers. And I think even this language of consumer, customer is going to change over time as we stop seeing barriers and it's more just, you know, we're people interacting with each other. And so what we're creating this year is really how do we create content that serves that larger conversation around how companies are interested in connecting in this different way. And moving away from this transactional mindset and then more into a relational mindset. And when you're thinking in that way, it feels better to be an employee
yeah,
that's empowered to do kind things for people, right? And not just, you know, you talk to any cold calling salesperson, it can feel pretty demoralizing at the end of the day. That you feel like you're push, push, push. And I think the future of how companies build brands is really supportive of you know, the product that we're selling, because I think it's more invitational, where companies are establishing, hey, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. These are my values. And if you want to associate with me, come and do that, you know?
That's awesome.
And I think about that a lot with your brand. Like, you've been very successful in building a brand that people want to associate with. It's, you know, there's kindness, there's sustainability, there's just a really powerful ethos, I think, infused in Hint that I definitely admire.
Yeah. Well, and we're also having, like, hopefully we get people thinking about fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, drinking water is really boring. And so we come out with, I mean, right now we're drinking the blackberry lemon water that
so
we just
good,
came out with. It's so yummy. And I think it might be my new favorite, but again, it's like, why should water be so boring?
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, but I think just, you know, in everything we do, all the branding and the advertising, we just mm-hmm. did a Super Bowl ad, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was a pie eating contest and lots of fun. And again, like, we like to have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's what I want our customers walking away with, that
mm-hmm.
it shouldn't be a chore to
yeah.
buy water. I mean, it should be fun. It should be easy. And I think you guys do a great job of that as well. So one other thing, you won way back when in 2017, the Salesforce Dream Pitch.
Yes.
At how was that? Was it just so crazy?
Oh my gosh. So that was another very binary moment where there's a fundamental difference in the company before and after that. And I have to tell you, the way I prepare for any big talk that I do is just talking to myself. You know,
yeah.
ad nauseum. I walk around my
yeah.
house like cleaning things because it's enough of a distraction to simulate what would happen if I was kind of knocked off my game on a stage. So I did that for about 2 weeks. My house was so spotless, but it was such a moment of excitement and really validation, because for me, first of all, you talk about a company that's grown with an incredible ethos. Salesforce is it, and I've always just really respected the way that they've grown, and there's such a shared ethos there also with relationship management. And I see the gift exchange as a core part of a relationship building endeavor for acquisition and retention. And I've been always just very excited for what the products you can build within the Salesforce ecosystem. And that's actually something that we'll be investing in this year as well. But winning that was so rewarding because, you know, Salesforce Ventures became involved. First through that prize money, but then they also became an investor in the later round, and they've been incredible to work with. And
that's great.
Yeah, such a great coach within that. I mean, that ecosystem is massive, and you definitely need a coach.
Yeah.
So I've been very fortunate.
How many people were in the audience when you were pitching?
They said the auditorium fit 4,000. It was pretty close to full. I'm not sure.
Wow.
But yeah, and there were these famous judges, The part that was really scary was I thought that I didn't realize it was in the round. because I'd not seen the auditorium, and I walked up and I was like, I don't know where to look. I'm just going to not think about that, you know?
That's so crazy. Was that the biggest pitch you've ever done?
Absolutely.
Was, yeah.
And so then fun. Too, it's broadcast and you know, it's also on YouTube. So it's definitely the most watched anything, but it's fun. Whenever I go to talks, there's always a person who said that they've seen the pitch.
That's so fun.
It's my little touch with that.
Well, and once you've done that, like everything else is easy, right? Like it's
interesting. Right. Like you hear people say it's no different speaking to 100 or 1,000 people. And I've always been like, yeah, right. There is a big difference and it's 10X. Yeah. But I understand now it's the same amount of preparation, really.
Totally.
And it's the same thing with fundraising. There's the same amount of effort raising 100,000 or a million or, you know.
It is the same amount. Same amount of effort. Either way in preparation and et cetera. That's very, very true, but that's exciting.
Yeah.
Super, super fun. So enjoys meditation. That's something that Sarah really likes. I was reading. So have you brought that into like your culture and your community at Loop and Tie as well?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've been toying with a lot this year is thinking about how just this conversation on infusing that mindset into a company in a way that you are supporting and not competing with really delivering goals, you know? And so something that we've been having conversation about this year is how do we really invest in our process and trust that the outcome will come? And so, you know, one of the things that a meditation teacher of mine taught me that has been just a really profound construct for me to think in is, what happens on an organic farm or a biodynamic farm where the farmer's goal is to invest in the soil. And when you invest in the soil, the food grows and it tends to be really good. But the goal is
like
the soil. Or the goal isn't the food. And in, you know, in factory farming, it's all about the food. And in 5 years, your soil's shot, you're burnt out, you gotta move on to the next. And I think, you know, if you take that construct and apply it to team building, how do you invest in a process that is regenerative and is sustainable over time? And when you do that, the profit, the outcomes, you know, the success tends to come. It comes in a way that doesn't feel as exhausting. And, you know, I can't say that I figured out the process yet, but that's the conversation that we have, and really empowering people to say what they need and know that they're supported in a way that feels like work is working for them, but it's still work, right?
Yeah.
There's still hard things that we have to do. There's still late nights. There's still the stress. But I think if you're supported in that way, you as an employee go about it differently. And, you know, I know I do. So that's something that I'll tell you more. Is that
I love it. I love it. That's great. So what makes you unstoppable? You've said a few things, but I always ask everybody.
You know, I think it's my curiosity. Mm-hmm. I realized at the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, I came in with a lot more conclusions than questions. And as I've progressed, I realized that there'll be a thing that I believe, and I believe it in a big way now, but it's probably going to change. And it's based off of what my understanding is right now and what my context is right now. And I think when you have that mindset, you make changes faster and you're also more aware. And when you have conclusions, there's a lot of confirmation bias that goes into your outlook on the world. And when you come in with curiosity, you can be disrupted. And I think that the value of a startup is how nimble it can be, right?
Totally.
And how we can make those shifts. And so over time, I've seen that in myself, and I am paying attention to that.
Well, and I also just think, you know, a lot of what you talked about too is just your journey, and you talked about some of your failures and how that made you stronger and like smarter about, you know, moving it forward. I think that's super awesome. So this is amazing. And congratulations on like Loop and Tie and just building this, and you're doing awesome. That's super, super great. So where do people find you?
So loopandtie.com is our website. I'm personally at Sarah without an H, Rodell. On Instagram is where I
forget that age.
Forget that. So, age. I spent my whole life saying Sarah.
Bring it over
age.
To Hint, and that's it. I hear you. I mean, ever since I got married, I mean, Kara Golden with an I, it's like I spend my life like with an I, with an I,
I know,
with an
I.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
yeah. No, exactly. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been super fun.
Thank you.
like what you heard, please help spread the word and leave us a review. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Please talk to me at Kara Golden on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, be unstoppable.